Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Here and again, another cigarless episode because I'm going to be recording inside today. It is very, very windy and cold outside. So regardless if I had a place to record outside at the moment, which I don't, it wouldn't work out anyway. So today we're going to talk about this mysterious stuff known as red mercury. Now, this comes from a listener who posted in the comments on YouTube, and I'd never heard of this stuff. I never heard of this conspiracy before. But we have been covering so much radioactive stuff lately and the deeper sciences of, you know, what holds the world together that I think this is actually going to be really fun. Now, before we get started, I know that you guys are going to be like, if people who are going to come to this video, what the hell are you talking about? And you're going to ride a nice ride, hopefully. For those of you who've already heard about this conspiracy and you're perhaps way more of an expert than I am, it's either the greatest money scheme scam to raise money for Russia that has ever been thought up. I mean, just fantastic. Or this stuff is very, very real because a lot of companies have been caught trying to purchase this stuff. So I'm not quite sure exactly whether or not I believe it's real or not, but I think that there's a significant amount of evidence to go either way. If you look it up on Wikipedia, it does what it normally does. And it just simply says, this was just these chemicals mixed together, dyed red, to give the illusion that it was something very real. Now, regardless if red mercury is real, the interesting thing is that, you know, bombs used to, nuclear bombs, and I know that some of you wonder if they existed, okay? I got a whole episode on that. I think it's called Do Atomic Bombs Exist? But aside from that, I know that personally from high school, when one of my teachers who taught sociology, I was taking a marriage, courtship and marriage class from this guy. Very bizarre. It was very cool. But randomly, I mean, this is my life, right? Randomly out of thin air, he brings in one of his college roommate, or not roommates, but college friends, who was a woman. And she was probably in her early 50s. And she worked for a little alphabet agency that starts with C and ends with A. This is all announced to the class. And her job was to evaluate, and had been her job for 25 plus years, to evaluate the potential threats of a Russian nuclear arsenal. 1985, okay. So we're talking about right around Chernobyl has just happened. Now, of course, there's been a lot of innovations since then, but here I am, a super physics kid in the school, known for that. And so I looked at her and I was like, okay, well, tell me what you think, you know, and I've said this story once before, but she said, you know, she says, what do you mean? I said, well, how good are they? She says, well, we think about 93% of them, this is 85, mind you, won't reach the United States. Like they don't have the missile technology to get here accurately. Of the ones that land on the ground, she said, we think about 97% of them won't go off. And this is a very, very dry person. And she wasn't volunteering that information. That was stuff I had to get out of her. So she didn't come here to give us a bunch of propaganda. In fact, I'm not even sure what she thought she was going to be talking about because it didn't seem like she was good with kids. You know, she was very dry. But God bless her. She gave us some information. But for anyone who's ever seen Matthew Broderick's film, War Games, which was based on a friend of mine who just passed away, his story was that my friend and boss from the past, now that he's gone, I can mention this. He got caught at 9 years old busting into the FBI servers. And then at 17 years old, he went into the CIA servers and they caught him. And then they said, well, you got a choice. You can go away to jail or you can come work for us. Now, his family was upper class, okay? One of his family members financed the World Trade Centers, okay? So this dude was from big old money. So he was also just happened to be a genius, is kind of like his whole family is, you know, bred well. And so he goes off and programs the Star Wars systems. And this is why, for those of you who ask me, you know, do satellites exist? Well, all I can tell you is I've held documents, you know, 2 inches thick for the total design of these Star Wars satellites that can shoot anything out of the space with rotating lasers, with missiles. It was all in this document. Again, he's gone now, so I can mention this. He just passed. We know from War Games that a missile warhead now has a bunch of little guys that could pop out. Now, it's not that the missiles turned into gigantic buses necessarily. I mean, they're pretty big. But they're fitting what used to take the entire bomb bay of the Nola Gay down into a little tiny baseball. And so that is the assertion of the use of red mercury. I want to get that out of the way because if someone says, well, it's stupid, red mercury doesn't exist, I read Wikipedia. I was like, okay, call it what you want. And one person actually said it was actually just a project code name. And why not, you know? But why not use the stuff? We're going to get into this three-part BBC series that was aired once, which was definitely doing the reality show thing. It was in the 90s. In fact, I think it was around 91 this was made. And it goes door to door and starts talking to everyone. And there's some interesting twists and turns with this documentary. Plus, we're going to apply our own analysis to it. But they have cores down to no less than a baseball softball size. What you have to fear about red mercury exists in the real world. It just might not be made of mercury and it might not be red. It might be. We'll see. So the special on BBC was called The Trial of Red Mercury. And it was a group of folks running around talking to some of the American experts in this realm and then going to Russia several times and bouncing all over Russia, talking to all kinds of folks. Some of the folks they end up talking to in this documentary definitely look like they could be more theatrical in their interviews. It's hard to tell because culturally we don't yell and scream and have average conversations at 65, 70 decibels like they do, at least these gentlemen back in that time. But the cornerstone first interview that they were getting to was they talked to a chemist here in the United States, and they simply said, look, this can't exist because you're basically claiming that through a chemical reaction of chemistry, mixing two things together, that something that isn't naturally radioactive suddenly becomes radioactive. There's a lot of logic to that, but you never know with alchemy, you know, how something could surprise you, right? But for something to be stable and then suddenly be radioactive, you're talking about messing with its very atomic composition. So many electrons, neutrons, protons, and you're chemically infecting it with another chemical that will actually break apart some of it such that you leave it unstable, such that it's emitting something that you can use, a neutron flow, right? So the whole like encapsulation of this theory about red mercury is that it's a super secret thing, that papers have been written for Gorbachev himself and then Yeltsin after that, all the way back into the mid-80s, where they were saying this stuff exists and look how secret this stuff is, creating kind of a buzz. So we're gonna pursue this from two different angles. The angle that it's a scam to make people want something that doesn't really exist, and it's like buying some drug that helps you sexually or something, and it doesn't do what it says. You don't return the product because you're so embarrassed you fell for it in the first place. There's a lot of theory behind. I mean, there's all kinds of products that simply get on TV and say, you know, if you pay this much, you get this product. But hey, we got a lifetime money back guarantee. Just knowing that overall the public doesn't return products, and so it's just a machine to sell junk, right? But you're talking about Russia through the 80s was falling apart financially. We know that for a fact. Now, there was a little bit more dramatization in movies and television about how many soup lines they had, toilet paper lines. A lot of that was propaganda. But you know, there's definitely scarcity at the time. And so they needed money to pay soldiers, scientists, politicians, pay for just holding the country together. They still wanted to advance all of their systems. They had tons of minerals and resources, but until Putin was capable of building the road between Moscow and St. Petersburg, you don't have a way to move stuff around efficiently. You had railroads, basically, maybe some planes or something like that. But everything in the USSR was crumbling, you know, everything. So they did this beautiful job synthesizing up this total secrecy and then leaking it out to the world such that a couple of BBC guys heard about it, put together a proposal to go chase this down. And they had to have some evidence to obviously convince the head of the BBC to finance their travels, because this was a fairly expensive process of jumping around, waiting for folks, taking people out to dinner, all the different flights and things. But the product that was being offered around the world in secrecy was something called RM 2020, Red Mercury 2020. And it was, again, it was going to allow you to create a radioactive isotope that was so volatile that if you were to have, I think they said if you took 8 baseball-sized cores and spread like 50 of them around Moscow or New York or whatever, just 50 of these little balls, I mean, you could carry that in a bag, you could blow up the whole city because there are just micro explosions everywhere. The technical chemistry composition of this, it has a reference number in most databases around the world as large H, little g, number 2, SB207. When people search in databases for this element, that's exactly what they look up. And what's interesting is they're saying this stuff doesn't exist, fine, but it is in a lot of databases. There are folks that have played with this, apparently, in various laboratories, Los Alamos labs, and that sort of thing. But when you approach them to talk about it, they say they can't talk about it. And this is even US to US people saying, well, they were aware of it, but they're not going to talk about it. When you hear those things, you know, it could be a coup on the people, but I don't remember this dropping into any Scientific American or any other science magazine. Wasn't any of the buzz of my friends who worked with this kind of equipment. So very interesting how it got blown up to the point where the BBC hears about it. Now, in terms of Red Mercury being a code name, it was essentially what we had as the Manhattan Project, which was a place, and a project name. It wasn't in Manhattan, of course. The known rumor was that Russia had started calling plutonium Red Mercury. Very interesting. Why would they call it Red Mercury and not some other fanciful, weird thing? But if you think about it, if the rumor about Red Mercury had never circulated as it has, it would be a nice, obscure, sort of obfuscated title. It's not Mercury and it's not red. It's red because it is Russian. And it may be Mercury is just a way of saying that stuff over there, right? And again, I'm not sure. I'm sure plutonium was definitely a word being used with all countries once it was announced in the world, like any element like gold or silver. But, you know, if you want to hide it, it's not a bad idea. Now, another element was called timony oxide. I want to say chemical element, but it was something that was created and tested in a 1968 DuPont paper where they essentially were saying that they were messing around with something very similar to what this composition of red mercury was supposed to be. And apparently in 1988, someone submitted a patent for red mercury, also denoted as this timony stuff. Very interesting. The interesting thing about a patent, and I didn't look it up, but they could be rather difficult, but you can submit any patent you want. Like I always remind you guys get a lot of patent pending conspiracy theories, and you need to look at the patent and make sure it was awarded. It doesn't mean it doesn't work, because you could come up with a perpetual motion engine. The patent office is not allowed to let you have that patent because you're going to start interfering with energy development. So they just say, just like the Wright brothers, who had flown 42 feet in the air and took a picture in 1903, weren't given the patent until 1907, when the French were going to go ahead and award them the patent. So the U.S. used the 9-hour difference and gave them the patent here in the United States. Now, with this 1988 patent, the theory was that it could be used on stealth fighters on the outside of the plane. Not exactly sure what that would mean. You wouldn't want anything emitting anything, as far as I know, on the external of the plane. But there was some association with potentially stealth bombers. And there was a catalyst called actimite that could actually start a neutron emitter process from something else. So you could put it together. Again, the chemistry is double blinded in this documentary. So you'll hear things referenced, but no one is specifically taking time in this documentary to say, here's what we're talking about, mixing this stuff together. In fact, one of the signs it's potentially a complete scam is that a lot of the Russians that he talks to are just kind of living in the abstract. And when asked, the first Russian that they actually bump into, they say, "What is your proof that this is real?" And they said, "Well, the documentation, that's what makes it real." And either they're so USSR at the time that they actually do believe that that's evidence, or they're just pulling a scam. So by the time Boris Yeltsin gets in, which I guess has to date this slightly past 91, he is getting a report on this Red Mercury, both from the standpoint of its purpose and its use in missile technology and nuclear bomb technology, of course, as a rudimentary mechanism of exploding. But more interestingly, again, if it's a scam, it's well done. A bunch of information about creating it and storing it and what facilities were actually repurposed from its their original purpose into creating this Red Mercury stuff and then how you would store it. So they developed a lot of sophisticated three-dimensional paperwork to sort of give it an ecosystem in the rumor mill of this rumor. And what's interesting about it is that, let's say you're pulling a scam, okay? And it's more of a he said, she said kind of thing, because you don't usually write down secrets, right? What's interesting is here comes this BBC firm. Now, their intelligence is just as good as ours at the time. They may have known that this team was coming. These guys submitting reports to this team. So they're at a they're at a desk. There's a guy across the desk. They push the piece of paper in front of it. It's like real low-res dot matrix printouts at the time. But if it's a scam, you got to come up with all this fake reporting system. So it was actually fairly elaborate if it was fake. But I think there's enough switching and changing of who they're interviewing and interviewing people that perhaps didn't know they were going to be interviewed a few minutes before it occurs. But these people have reports on them about this Red Mercury, and they're old pieces of paper that date back, you know, potentially 7 years in some cases, right? These reports written in the 80s. And so it's interesting to have the scam sit in a bunch of filing cabinets. So there's a point you pull out an old piece of paper and go, yeah, yeah, here's the thing on Santa Claus back from the 2200 BC, right? Now, very quickly in this documentary, they, again, we've been talking about this and making fun of this. When you mention scientific things and people without any background just go, oh, yeah, that sounds right, you know? So they take them to this warehouse that has a fairly elaborate, but very small particle accelerator. Now, typically, a particle accelerator, as in the CERN Hadron Collider, is crushing two protons together, and then studying the cloud that comes off of it, and using algorithms to figure out what's dust and just noise, and what is actually an atomic element, maybe a quark, subatomic element that's moving out of that collision. Okay, but they're claiming. And I don't know, again, there wasn't enough budget and time in this documentary, probably wasn't enough special effects at their disposal to animate this, but they're saying that they took the oxided version of red mercury and then they bind it with strontium and cerium isotopes within this particle accelerator. So slamming them together inside the particle accelerator and getting these new elements to come out of it. Now, I'm unaware of anything that heavy. Maybe you know, I don't have any research of anything that's like a liquid, a heavy, especially heavy strontium, suspending that in some sort of beam. You know, it could be a different machine. I could definitely see some of these crazy, Taurus machines that seem to be able to create plasma clouds inside them and stuff. Maybe introducing it with an eyedropper or something. I don't know how you would emit this into a tunnel and then focus it down so well that you get to slam it together. And this was a circular collider in the video. They took you there. So there's an island in North Russia called, as I'm going to brutalize the name, it's like Nova Sinya, that was excavated. They dug a bunch of holes for underground testing because about by 1973, and this is when it was officially banned, you know, above ground testing was banned. Countries were still figuring out way before then that, hey, detonating this stuff above the ground is probably not good for the health of everybody who's going to be continuing to work in the area. Because even if my other discoveries from Galen Windsor are true, that this fallout actually dissipates within 4 to 8 weeks. You don't want to have clumps that are taking longer. You can't put your workers up there, your brilliant scientists. You don't want them to die. So this island was a place where they were already doing a lot of nuclear testing. So they overlay the claim that this was also a place where they were testing these red mercury detonations. And the big epiphany was that it was to use less plutonium, more and more. So less plutonium, slightly more red mercury, and then testing the yield of what they were getting out of this. So then through moving around, these BBC folks had actually found that paperwork existed, I think as early as like 1982-ish, where they actually found a lot of paperwork where this stuff was being manufactured, transported, and exported, and that there was a ton of paperwork with this, and that by 1990, a kilogram of this red mercury was selling for $250,000. Now, let's think about the scam angle of this whole thing. You have a couple things to consider. One, Saddam Hussein was supposedly trying to get a bunch of this stuff. Of course, he was a big buzzword at the time, and they were trying to put the boogeyman out there. So this BBC thing was dropping around Desert Storm time. Someone would have paid. He said he was going to pay $1 million for some of this stuff. Okay. I think that if you could prove that red mercury allows you to create some sort of teeny tiny atom bomb, okay, Saddam Hussein would pay $500 million for that. So would a sheik, so would India, so every major country, China, everyone would be buying this stuff and creating one of those bombs. And yeah, these countries do potentially have these bombs, although I can't, there's a lot of countries that have said that they have nuclear bombs, but you've never seen any evidence. I hope they don't. I've seen the underground testing is very dramatic when you see the field of dirt, you know, just falls into the ground in this perfect, you know, concentric circles. But that doesn't mean it's atomic. If anything, you just bury a bunch of TNT in the ground, pop it, build a bunch of funny, you know, Kim Jong-un missiles with their little tips, you know, tilted off because they're not built very well, and put them on very intense industrial big rigs to say that you've got nuclear bombs, and then everybody starts respecting you more. But if it's real, let's think about this. So you sell, I don't know, 10 kilograms of this stuff, you raise $1 million. Okay. So, I mean, because they're saying the only quantification in this documentary at this point in the documentary was that a kilogram costs $250,000. It doesn't mean that that's the increment that they bought. We'll just take one. They could have bought gallons of this stuff and been paying $250 million, something like that, raising this money. Now, imagine you've bought some crap because it's a scam. It's going to go one of two ways from that point forward. Do you want your scam artist to get caught? Or are you so embarrassed you bought the stuff that you're going to let him get away with selling it to other people? Maybe thinking it's maybe a weapon against your enemies who believe it's real because you're going to start draining their coffers. It could go either way. You could also leak out that the stuff is fake without accepting the liability yourself. You know, like, hey, this stuff is fake, just pass it on, right? And you could even conceal who you are at that point, right? So at one point in this documentary, somebody submits all the companies within Russia that were allowed to generate this red mercury. And the interesting thing was, again, we're thinking about scam, is it fake or is it real, right? Again, everything could be orchestrated. If it's all orchestrated, wow, unbelievable. You get like an 8.5 on this scam scale. But this report comes out under Yeltsin's watch. And, you know, he's supposed to be the guy of change and that kind of stuff. But he's also inherited a country that's upside down financially. And it just goes tits up all the way through the 90s, right? Until Putin gets in power. But because this report comes out and it looks as if, oh my gosh, there's like two dozen companies creating red mercury within our country. But even if you try to regulate its export, a lot could go wrong. And a lot could fall in the hands of criminals, which is one of the assertions that's coming up here. So one of the politicians at one point stood up in their parliament, their new free parliament, and basically accused, or basically, I wouldn't say accused because you can't, but yelled at Yeltsin, hey man, this is a very volatile substance. We can't have this being created by any company willy-nilly. And as a result of that guy talking, it was officially decided that one company is going to be allowed to create this stuff. Again, could be drama. If it is, it's pretty amazing. So they run into this guy named Oleg Sadikov. I'm going to destroy these names, but it's gotten to a point where they need to kind of upgrade the documentary. It's like in the second segment. Well, you kind of need to start seeing something because talking about rumors isn't going to get it done. So this guy makes a phone call to somebody, and they're always making these phone calls to people. Someone knocks on the door. This is with the camera running, and knocks on the door and brings in what looks like a oil filter for a car, right? So it's this canister, and it's a white canister, really nice and polished. It looks like it doesn't have this particular purpose, but it actually, sorry, I have to re-describe that. It was a coffee can that was pretty small, about a medium-sized coffee can. Inside that, he pulls out this neat space-age looking container, of which then he turns, pulls off the container, and it's got a glass bottle in it with definitely, I don't know, 4/5 full of this red stuff. It could have been anything, right? And he's showing it to the guys, and he says, this is red mercury prior to being activated. So this is the base component that gets it done. Now, of course, it could have been anything, and they said, well, can we take samples of it? And he says, oh, no, of course not, right? The plot thickened a little bit. So early on in the documentary, they start talking to this guy named Dr. Arthur Slate, and he was a guy that was involved with the DuPont analysis of the red mercury. And they talked to that guy first, and he says, well, you know, we played with this stuff, but it wasn't radioactive in any way, shape, or form. And he's the guy that first says, look, I don't know how you can use chemistry to start making something, you know, emit a neutron stream out of something, right? Then they grab this guy named Frank Barbie, Dr. Frank Barbie. He actually travels with them in a later trip to Russia to start talking to the guys making these claims. Now, again, they also make a claim, and they're, you know, investigations that Libya was trying to buy this stuff. Again, the second sort of axis of evil in the early 90s. Looks like an agenda is going on within this BBC situation. And they said that he was trying to buy a bunch of the stuff and send it to Tripoli. Now, what's interesting is they're talking to one of their contacts, and the dude realizes, because the guy's bragging about the fact that there's a invoice on his desk of an American company that's trying to buy red mercury. And so they said, well, can we take a look at that contract? We just really want to find out who they are. No, I can't show it to you. Well, let me make a phone call. And the guy finally decides to show them the name of this company. Except when they go and try to find the actual address, it's just a P.O. box in New York City. And apparently the price at that point was $290,000 per kilogram. They end up going to Los Angeles to find the head of the office, and this company's like Automotive Products International. It's like an automotive shop. Just think of any place you go to buy auto parts and then a little office in the back. And this dude's in there. And he takes an interview. His name was Jesus Godinez. Now, again, if it's a scam, they're doing a great job setting up all the little touch points. And you could. I mean, if you really wanted to do it, you could find one of your operatives in Los Angeles who just happens to be local Latin descent. So he seems really genuine to the area. And this is your script and blah, blah, blah. And so they were asking the guy, they said, well, you know, what do you want to do with this stuff? Because, you know, we're hearing that it can help make polymers and all kinds of other stuff, but it's also really heavily connected to, like, nuclear bombs, right? And he goes, oh, we don't have any need for that. But when he starts talking about it, he goes, well, who can afford to purchase this at $290,000 per kilogram, right? And then he makes the boast, which is interesting in the psychology of someone pulling a scam. I don't know if this makes it counter scam or more realistic. I don't know. But he starts to say, no, I'm representing countries. There's countries behind our company that want to use this technology to build better automotive parts. Now, the big question, too, was how do you ship around something that would be a radioactive isotope? I mean, how do you do it? There are and have been sensors to check cargo for radioactive emissions for obvious reasons, right? Well, the claim was that Switzerland was going to be a place, because they barely have any laws, that were going to allow this material to be shipped through to any other destination. So Russia sends it to Switzerland, and Switzerland sends it to whoever wants it. And the other thing is there's a Swiss company called Speech Lab. It's S-P-E-E-S-C-H, Lab. They were the wrapper company that was going to actually claim it when it came through customs and then claim it as they shipped it out. So it's kind of laundering its source with the world and get it to wherever it's supposed to go. So towards the end of this documentary, they go back to Dr. Arthur Slate, and they talk to him again because he's had a little bit of time. They're running off filming this thing, chasing folks around. Folks wouldn't have, they said, oh, I'll meet you here, and then it takes a week to get the interview with them. It must have been a laborious documentary to make if they're telling the truth. But by the time they come back, they talk to Slate again, and he says, you know what? I asked the dude who works in Los Alamos Labs about this RM-2020. And he says, the guy told him, well, I know about this stuff, but I can't talk to you about it. So if it's a complete scam that's just simply Russian hatched, then that person, I don't think, would have said that. However, if it's a combined situation where both superpowers of the world want the people to be afraid of this, then they missed the boat on spreading the rumor to the public. Yeah, this documentary was made in the BBC. How come in all my travels, talking about this stuff at length, and all of our previous videos, it only got mentioned recently, and obviously there's tons of videos online about it, but it just seems like they missed the boat of mass media consumption. Think about any other fear-mongering, problem-reaction-solution thing that you know about. They get the word out, But now let's talk about the fact that Russia has always been rumored to have suitcase bombs. And no one has a problem believing that. I think back during the coup of Russia, they were talking about this on the radio. And the thing is, if this was true, you would think that this would have been the mechanism for 9/11. But they said that there was X amount of suitcase bombs in Russia. And some military guy, general or something, auctioned off a bunch of these to whoever wanted to pay the highest price. Now, you take a country like Iran, or more importantly, Iraq, especially when they're threatening and bombing and putting all kinds of no-fly zones over Iraq all the way through the 90s. If Saddam Hussein could get his hands on one of those things, and I know that they fake weapons of mass destruction on him and accused him of a bunch of stuff he didn't have anything to do with, but he was holding up stuff at big giant meetings and threatening the region with his power. If he could have popped one of these suitcases somewhere, he definitely would have. He is fairly close to Russia, and I think that he could definitely spare some coinage in any form of currency it would take to pry one of those suitcases out of Russia's hands and pop it, because he got to a point where I doubt he cared, So before we move on to other stuff related to Red Mercury, the BBC three-part series just ends in mystery. It never proves anything. It just gets your curiosity going. So then I go look up some other stuff and just kind of try to see, what's the scam of Red Mercury in general. So this very interesting little thing happened related to Red Mercury and sewing machines, especially old Singer sewing machines. So Red Mercury is in our discussion about creating a synthetic isotope, meaning it didn't exist before. You take mercury, red mercury, and you bombard it with strontium and cerium, and you can get it to be chemically different than what it was before, to the point it can start replacing plutonium cores. Or it's added to plutonium, so that you need very little plutonium, and this other stuff is actually, I think it's supposed to be inside the plutonium wrapper. So, someone also adds to this that you can find treasure if you have red mercury. Not quite sure how that works. And that you can ward off evil spirits. So imagine just having a little bit on you and then red spirit, spirits can't get around you, red spirits. So someone wants to sell a ton of sewing machines, old sewing machines. Now, what's interesting is I used to watch I actually found it and watched a bunch of old episodes. But there's a channel that is, I think it's still on YouTube, but it used to run a television show on the BBC4 with these two guys that used to make a lot of props for all the television shows. going back 20 years. And so they ended up selling a show where they show you how things work. And it was like a show, I think it was called Machines. It was a bit like Connections, but it was all based on various things. A telephone, where did it come from the very back to the very front? And they also did sewing machines at one point. So because I saw this episode on sewing machines, and then we hear about the scan that was pulled in the last 15 years, you put the two together and it's actually very interesting. You see, we know that just a crap ton of sewing machines were made the second they were invented, especially Singer, right? It's a very interesting story behind that guy you can see on Machines. I'll try to remember to add it in the description below. But the market for selling exotic old sewing machines and crappy ones that were the same exact model but not very well taken care of, it had matured quite a bit, meaning suppliers knew where to find them. They went to antique sales, estate sales. There's museums in, I know, Great Britain, where you go in and see a bunch of sewing machines. I'm sure they exist here in the United States as well. And so there was a market ready to sell these things. And so someone sprung up this rumor that if you have this red mercury, amazing things can happen in your life. And guess where we can get a bunch of it? It's supposedly in the needle area of the sewing machine. So that little pocket where it goes down inside the needle. They were never very specific about exactly where it was supposed to be, because you're just supposed to buy the machine and then you could sell the machine at this exorbitant price to this one Saudi prince that wanted to get a bunch of it, right? Sound familiar, right? And so there was a huge run on sewing machines. Apparently the stories were published in 2009, basically announcing this was all a scam. Very, very interesting how that happens, right? So that turned out to be not so true, right? Could you imagine if that was the case? All these people paying, you know, millions and millions of dollars for these kilograms of red mercury. Now, there was no claim that this stuff was activated as this RM2020. It was just sort of like the base ingredient that then you would run it through this particle accelerator or whatever, right? But I thought we would button this episode up by just kind of reviewing the current state of affairs as it relates directly to this technology, because they have definitely ratcheted up a bunch of fear mongering this year. Now, I'm going to make a chaos report after this episode. I'll be wearing the same shirt. So if you like those kind of things, they're no longer on YouTube, because why even give them that traffic, right? They're going to be on Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey. So just join any of the social media platforms that we endorse, and you'll find it out there. Again, most of them are non-censoring platforms. But so this you know, Ukrainian war thing is sort of died away, right? I mean, it's not even in the press anymore. Every morning I wake up and I have a channel that I can view what's actually taking place over there, because the troops no longer need embedded press anymore. They all have cell phones. So they're recording themselves on the ground, and they're the Nazi versions on the ground. And then you have your Russians coming in and pounding them, right? Drones and all kinds of stuff. So just so we're clear, it's still going on over there. We obviously get a report here and there that, you know, resources are being bombed in Kiev or Kiev. But this, you know, this FF that they might try to pull by blowing up one of these things, I think it's hopefully it's losing steam, because we know that that would catalyze a crazy event. It has also been, I think, conclusively revealed that United States personnel are on the ground. And for those of you who don't know a whole hell of a lot about history, the Americans will refer to the war in the 50s as the Korean War. But technically speaking, it was never a war on paper, which made it okay. But we were certainly tearing the place up over there, right? Hence the show MASH, right? But they called it a police action. Okay, call whatever you want. We're involved and people are dying messing around over there. I think that what's very fascinating is the evolution, the videos of the carnage that I've seen have gone from what looks like taking a bunch of your arsenal. And this is one sort of nasty side effect of any military industrial complex in the world. Let's say you develop a bunch of weapons, and who cares what they are? There's always a lifespan of a weapon. Even a bullet has a lifespan that you're supposed to fire it before a certain amount of time. Now, the other half of that is that the more complex the weapon, a Tomahawk missile, the shorter the lifespan of those things. It might be long in your frame of reference, but they don't like to have these things stacked up everywhere, because what happens then? You fill up all your slots. They're all full. And who's going to, and what's war for? War's for making money for the elite, right? Taking all of our taxpayer dollars, running it through war corporations, which then gets siphoned out to like the Bush family, to the Carlyle group, right? So they like to create situations where these stockpiles get blown up. All right, so think about this. You have military industrial complexes kind of all over the world, right? And their technology increases with time, constantly, right? So whatever you had in the box 20 years ago is crap. But it still might have a 10 years lifespan left. It might have a 30-year lifespan. So now, if you're going to go create a war situation, which arsenal are you going to get rid of first? The new stuff or the old stuff? Well, you're going to probably do both if the interaction lasts a fairly, you know, decent amount of time. But you're going to get rid of your crap most likely first. Just get it out there, blow it off. Who cares, right? A bunch of, you know, rocket clusters. Why not get rid of that stuff first? I think what I've seen is this. 4 months ago, all of the attack stuff I've seen happening was about 80% super inaccurate missile strikes, artillery strikes. It was more just like blanketing a field with stuff. And today, just as of like this morning, I saw a video where I think it's a missile system. It was just absolutely shot. I mean, it was probably only 10 feet by 10 feet in terms of its target area. And this missile comes out of nowhere, hits that thing perfectly, and blows up this huge plume. I think they call it an S-30. I don't know what that is. But it continued blowing up and blowing up as if it's got something in it, right? It's a very white cloud, which looks like rocket fuel to me. So I think what's happened is Russia has taken a ton of their old equipment and just gotten rid of it just as quick as they possibly can. You know, sometimes you look at those videos where they've got all these, you know, these, I forgot what you call them, but the pillbox or the boxes that are on top of the Jeeps, and you just see those rockets just going boom, 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 and it goes, you know, several miles away and lands. You think, well, how many of these things could they possibly have? I mean, you know, once you fire those things out, I don't know if you can refill them or you got to take them back, get the tops replaced. I don't know. But those things have been going on since the 70s, since the Iran-Iraq war. So that technology is ancient. It's probably much more refined today. But imagine having those rockets in some warehouse because you're Russia and you haven't really fought a war since the 70s with Afghanistan, right? So you want to get rid of that stuff. It still dazzles the eye, right? It's still fireworks. And obviously, war is the most ridiculous thing we could possibly be doing on this planet. Building societies to hate other societies is just a troglodyte mindset, right? The cave dwellers coming out to sort of try to create a society all unto themselves. It's hard for like a middle American person to really grasp someone wanting to die for something anymore. Because the military kids who went over to the Middle East, well, they had an event in September 2001 to catalyze their mind. All these, you know, dramatic things on TV where Pakistani television shows are slicing people's heads off, and then they put it out there on the press as if it's real. And then the pictures from the sets come through and you realize it's all a scam. But these people on both sides of the fence over there are truly dying in the dozens every single day for what they believe in, you know. And I think it's clear that when the Z-Man shows up with a bracelet with a bunch of swastikas on it, we know what team they're on. They've now shot, and these things can be created, but, you know, they have trenches over there with Nazi flags out of them. You know, they've got them painted on their trucks as soon as they're captured. Now, again, it could be propaganda, but you can't propaganda on the videos where these guys are stripped down and their bodies are absolutely covered with white Aryan stuff, right? So it seems clear to some of us that some people are super duper behind the times when it comes to social acceptance. And then a bunch of people on that side of the fence are being lured into war when they don't care, they just want peace. They're not Nazis, they're not Russian, they just want to live where they grew up, and they're dying as a result due to these attacks because they're sitting in foxholes. And there's a lot of actual collateral damage that I've never seen before in any footage, and it may be that this happens all the time and we never see it, but a lot of soldiers are getting hurt over there just simply trying to drive a tank through a field, and they end up hitting some problematic area, whether it be a bombed out crater or just they didn't know the river was there, and these vehicles roll over and, you know, it looks like in a tank, you're stuck. Because if it goes belly up on its top, all the doors, as far as I understand, are at the top of these old vehicles. Personnel carriers definitely got doors out the back. Just recently saw a video yesterday where a bunch of soldiers jumped on a personnel vehicle. One guy was, you know, they kept spiking the driver to go faster and faster. This guy's going 60 miles an hour with probably 10 guys on top of the vehicle and just needs to drive a straight line down a road and ends up checking his cell phone or something, and he just drives into a ditch and probably killed, you know, 7 out of 10. I mean, it's just nuts. Friendly fire kind of problem, right? I am yet to worry seriously about them using these arsenals. We do have, and I don't want to give away too much because I do need to create a chaos episode after this, but, you know, North Korea is firing missiles back and forth. South Korea is there. They drop one in our DMZ territory. So a lot of fear-mongering, you know. So hopefully they get things under control. I think that, again, because this situation in Ukraine has fizzled out in terms of press coverage, I think that we're so far looking at it basically fizzling out. It probably took a while to neutralize the threats over there because you got a Z-man who's just an actor who thinks he's the president, you know, and no experience. You can tell he's a super coke addict, and he's threatening people for, you know, tens of billions of dollars every day and calling for, you know, violating Geneva Convention, you know, like you should bomb Russia with nuclear weapons. It's like, dude, there's rules against doing this, you know, and you can't incite that kind of thing publicly without being kind of culpable in case it occurs, right? Like, luckily, those weapons are locked away if they do exist. Anyway, I hope you dug the questions about Red Mercury. That's as much serious data as I could really find besides Wikipedia. It's just poo-pooing it away. Again, one of two things. Well, I should say one of three things, okay? You have the most brilliant money, I can't even say money laundering scheme. Maybe you could call it that, but you're selling a bogus product by propping it up in the eyes of those who want it, charging a tremendous amount of money for it. It's your fault if you can't figure out how it works, right? And you don't want to let anybody know you got scammed, so you let the product stay in your living room. Or it really did exist, it does exist in Russia, and it's used to do this catalyzing plutonium core thing. Or three, it is not really made of mercury. It's really not red, but it was a code name for plutonium in general. And the byproduct of that conversation is our War Games example, which says, hey, if you're worried about red mercury existing because it can make a core of a bomb really, really teeny to then blow up a city at 50 megatons, well, according to the rumor mill, that stuff already exists. And to anyone who thinks they don't exist, I completely sympathize with you. I have personally never seen one go off. And the test is this. The test, the most absolute test would be you would be allowed to inspect an area of land where this thing is supposed to go off. Metal detectors, whatever you got to do, the ones that take sonogram tests at the ground, you know, make sure nothing's buried there, right? Then you go back a safe distance. You go back, maybe go to the airport where this vehicle's got this bomb, or you go to the launch site where the weapon exists, and you get to inspect it. They take the covers off, and they say, there's the core right there, and you see all these little cores? Okay, that's that. And, you know, all these are dead except for one, and the one that's alive is going to hit your spot over there. Then you get back safe, you put your goggles on, you get in your safe area, and here comes this rocket. Boom, boom. And that core hits the ground and explodes in front of you. So you know there wasn't TNT buried there, and you know there wasn't something else weird. I mean, it's a small payload, right? So it's got to be one of those bombs, or good enough, right? And then kaboom, it happens, and you get to witness it. You get to feel the concussion. You get to feel some heat. You even see a little bit of fallout, and then you're like, okay, this stuff's real. That's the only way we can really guarantee ourselves it's real. Okay, so I'm with you on that. I still believe the thousands of people from Hiroshima that saw 80,000 people get vaporized. I don't think you can get just every average citizen, okay, little girl, here's what you're going to say in 10 years. You know, this was real. You saw a flashlight. Remember, you could see your hand, your bones through your hand. Now tell that lie and pass it on to the next. I don't think so. I think they're very real. And I think there's a concerted effort to make us sort of oblivious to the threat so that we'll be the biggest guinea pigs of its actual destruction. I completely support the steam being taken out of the fear-mongering situation, because in the end, it's, if any of you have had to deal with bullies in your life, if some kid's like, I'm going to beat your ass every single day, at some point that algorithm just gets tired. And you're like, okay, well, you just threaten me every single day you want, and I'm just going to keep envisioning you actually coming after me so that when you do, I've actually thought the fight out way more than you do. I'm going to look at your kneecaps, and I'm going to look at this and that. I'm going to have much more on you than you think, because you keep running your mouth instead of doing what you apparently think you're going to do, right? So if you've done your homework, go see the radiation episode with Galen Windsor if you're terribly concerned about that. Someone recently watched Do Atomic Bombs Exist? And he said you should revisit that. Well, just watch the Galen Windsor episode and your dreams will come true. But anyway, I'd be interested in anything you guys have to add to this. I probably won't do a fully dedicated episode unless some monster amount of evidence releases, but we can drop it in other episodes. And if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. We have another episode that was kicked out of the backup channel. Again, I have a DTR Time Machine channel, which is not live. Nothing has been published, and they're in there running the algorithm on those same videos that are on this channel on YouTube, let's just say, and they're knocking out videos. So I put a new one in the website for the band by YouTube. Again, for some reason, they're still on this channel and nothing's been touched. Don't know if somebody friendly inside YouTube, but don't mess with this channel. Everything's on BitChute, everything's on Rumble, and everything's on Odyssey. As far as I know, maybe Odyssey doesn't go back the entire distance, but Odyssey is HD and loads really, really fast. Rumble is obviously something I think we need to support because they seem to have a good collection of folks. But again, we have all the audio, video, social media, all new remastered season one, but that's on all the other channels anyway. That's only on YouTube. And eventually they might just crush us over there and it won't even matter. I won't have to say this anymore. We did get a new handle on our URL for YouTube. So for those of you who might have bookmarked the old YouTube channel, I don't think you do. You just subscribe and that's it. It's changed from @MKUltraRadio, which was the old radio show I had before I even made this show. And it always bothered me that it was not right. So now it's @DeepThoughtsRadio, Deep Thoughts Radio on YouTube. So we finally got the handle that we wanted. Thank God. And so we have a store up there too. I have a couple ideas for new shirts. I'm going to get those up there. The problem is I'm switching apparel stores. I have the one I think I like, but I just don't have the time to do all the shirts again over there. So I will get to it at some point. To all of you who have been donating on PayPal and Patreon, thank you so much. We got quite a bit of PayPal stuff just recently. Hopefully I got everybody in the credits. But again, when you do join PayPal, the cool thing is you get the episodes the second they drop on my computer. You get audio first because the video is encoding on my computer. As soon as that's done, upload it at least at 1080. I give it to you on Patreon. Sometimes I give it to you before it's even encoded, so you have it just raw right there. But a lot of folks love to get the audio raw. So PayPal has turned into a kind of a douchebag organization. But it is a way that I can get, you know, donations from you guys. Again, I just appreciate everything. Just know I don't have your email when you donate on PayPal, so you can send me a message and I can't get back to you, just so you know. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.